Hey, this is Weekly Newspaper Podcast with Darren Johnson, a podcast about weekly newspapers. Okay. And, you know, the problems they face, and then some philosophical issues, too. I just was watching. The good thing about getting up in years is a lot of people say time moves quicker as you get older, and I feel it's moving slower for some reason. And maybe this is just like post-COVID or something, but it feels like time is moving slower. So a movie was suggested for me by Roku, and it's, you know, because I watch journalism-related movies, because I also teach college classes, and normally we do a movie of the month that's a journalism movie. So I try to watch as many journalism movies as possible, and then we'll talk about the movies and some of the issues that arose during the movie that were journalistic in nature, and it could bring up some ethical issues and things of that nature. One movie that Roku suggested was from 2014, God's Pocket. It's called God's Pocket, and it's based on a book, and it stars Philip Seymour Hoffman, who since has passed. And in the movie, I know I've seen it before, but the beauty of it is watching it again 10 years later or wherever, whenever I first saw it, it seems like a new movie to me. So, you know, that's part of the joy of getting older, is you've seen so many things that your brain only has so much capacity. And if you watch something that's like more than 10 years old, it starts to feel, you know, give or take, more than 5 years old sometimes, it starts to feel like new again. So you get to enjoy it all over again. So like every like several years, I can put on Pulp Fiction and notice something and say, wow, you know, look what Jules did, you know, something like that. All right, so Philip Seymour Hoffman, I kind of like him as an actor. He's done a lot of great movies that I kind of like. I think it's because he can give, like, that everyman appeal. And it seems like almost like from another era, and the appeal he has. Of course, he was in the Capote movie and a really good gambling movie. Probably the best gambling movie there is. Is Owning Mahoney, and he plays like this banker who kind of it's based on a true story, who kind of pilfers funds and redirects money to feed his gambling habit, and it gets into like the psychology of it and the whys about it. And I find it's like the most accurate movie on gambling from a negative viewpoint. You know, of course there's movies where it kind of glorifies casino living and all of that, but it's probably one of the best movies for cautionary tales for gambling that's out there. Owning Mahoney, that one's called. Well, this one, God's Pocket, is also pretty good. It's now, I don't think I would suggest it for my journalism students, because hey, we're in the year 2024, and while I feel that the whole, you know, I think COVID spiked a lot of people's anxiety, and there were what were called trigger warnings and things of that nature, and the culture becoming a little bit more PC. I feel like that's starting to wane, and we're getting, you know, a little bit more back to honest conversation. And perhaps that is because of what's happening with Israel and Palestine and Gaza and Hamas and all of that. And, you know, there's like real death and destruction going on. And are you going to worry about offending someone verbally when there's people being offended physically at this point in time? So, you know, while it's still good to be careful with your words, maybe there's a little bit more leeway there. And I think students can be more forgiving than you think. Sometimes, like, we get the 1% of very vocal students, and we think that's all students. And if you look at, like, who's actually protesting, as far as students goes, it's probably like 1% of students that are protesting this war that's happening in another part of the world. But it seems like it's a louder amount. And that's also a journalistic question. Should the newspapers and media be covering these protests as much as they do? Does it paint a fair picture of what the protests are when most people are kind of like taking maybe see both sides a little bit? and it's more complicated than you think. Well, anyway, God's Pocket is a journalism, I'd say it's a journalism movie because there's a major character who's a journalist, and it's told from this, it's set in, even though it was released in 2014, it's set in maybe the 70s when newspaper columnists were still a major like celebrity position at newspapers. And so it follows like this drunken, Jimmy Breslin type, that columnist of lore that could go into all neighborhoods and tell the stories of real people. That type of columnist that comes from the early to mid and up to about maybe the 70s before newspapers became more corporatized. Where a journalist didn't have to go to college and could instead come from the streets. And so they had like that appeal. And one line that came from it that I thought was, it's covering like this blue collar community called God's Pocket in, not sure what the city is, but I think it feels like Philadelphia. And I guess I could look it up, but it feels like Philadelphia. And it, and I could be wrong, so maybe I'll go on Wikipedia, and you can go on Wikipedia too, but, one line that it's like a fading, he's now 60 years old, although he looks older, and it's played by, the actor, Richard Jenkins, who is in a lot of things. He's like a balding, wears glasses, I guess he looks older than his age, although in it, someone says to him, oh, you don't look 60. Well, maybe, in those hard drinking days when everyone smoked cigarettes, people looked older than they are, because I'm not that far off from 60, and I don't look anywhere, not to pat myself on the back, but I don't look like as old as this guy looked in the movie. But in general, it brings up an interesting point, but I wouldn't show it to students because there are a couple of sexual situations that would probably be problematic. At one point, he is, sometimes when, especially back in the last century, if you're a writer, sometimes you get kind of like people that admire you who also want to be writers. And if you're a writer of stature, there's a certain celebrity to that amongst, not just the people that you cover, but, and this isn't as true nowadays by any stretch, but last century it was. So I kind of remember those days, and I was too young to have had that stature back then. But I remember, people older than me having some stature, and, a college student, admires his writing, a college journalism student. And, so he beds her, and it's kind of like a grotesque, almost scene because he's 60 and she's like 20. And that just would bring up some weird conversation in class, I think, that whole situation. So, and then also, Christina Hendricks, who is the love interest, the wife of Philip Seymour Hoffman, also is bedded at one point, kind of really, it's kind of a Me Too situation, in my opinion, by this writer. So I think it just brings up too many issues, and it's not a journalism story. It's based on a book, but I don't think it's based on a true story. So usually when I give journalism stories to students, they're based on some kind of reality. So like She Said, which is based on the Harvey Weinstein investigations, or Spotlight, which is based on the pedophilia ring in the Catholic Church. Those type movies that are based on real stories, they're dramatizations, but they're based on real journalism stories. So that, and this one really isn't, even though the main character, is a journalist from a different era, and that would bring up some interesting conversations about writing versus journalism. What is a writer? What is a journalist? When do the two kind of mix? you know, leaving, being a person that writes columns, building an audience, not writing in the objective format that is more common in newspapers. What was maybe lost when newspapers went from being staffed by ordinary people to college graduates. That whole shift in what newspapers became. You know, they also became corporatized, and the colleges ended up being the feeding grounds for these corporate newspapers. And so, you know, there's a lot of reasons why newspapers went the way they went. And I'm not putting down college students, because obviously I teach college students and I went to college. So I'm not putting down college students by any stretch. And, you know, I just think that it was a unique era, and maybe it brought a more diversity of voices to a newspaper, having people from all walks of life writing for the newspaper. That might have been a good thing. Anyway, there's a line in it towards the end, and the story focuses on Leon Hubbard, who is the, he's Philip Seymour Hoffman's, I guess, stepson, and he's killed early in the movie. And, you know, there's a whole bunch of, like, because it's a poor neighborhood, how do we bury him? And Philip Seymour Hoffman needs money, and he's, you know, money problems, and everyone's a little sketchy. The funeral parlor's sketchy, won't take the body, et cetera, et cetera. And there's a line towards the end where, you know, so eventually the journalism character, played by Richard Jenkins, writes his column after going around and, you know, hanging out at the bars where the locals are in God's Pocket. And they all read his stuff and they like him. And they all know who he is. Now, would that happen today, that a bunch of people in a bad neighborhood who drink at the corner bar, would they know, could they name one person who writes for the local newspaper nowadays? Like, there's not even probably a sports writer that they could name, because they're not even reading newspapers at all at this point. And so how many papers are there still of the people? Maybe the Post is still there a little bit. Maybe the Daily News is still a little bit. But how many papers are there, like, that are of the people that people are still reading, and they could name a non-sports columnist or a non-sports writer for the paper, let alone a sports columnist like a Mike Lupica or that level of columnist, celebrity columnist. You know what, those people have largely disappeared over time, or they've gone to other mediums like TV. They're on TV, they're doing commentating, they're on the internet, they're on radio, they're doing other things now. So they moved on, in other words. Mitch Albom used to be a sports columnist of note, and now he writes books, you know, so people move on to more lucrative things. And one line towards the end is when he writes the piece about the person, is, if we stop listening to Leon Hubbard's story, you know, Leon Hubbard being from this poor neighborhood and everything, if we stop listening to Leon Hubbard's story and all the neighborhood stories like it, eventually the neighborhoods will stop listening to ours. So that's actually kind of a wise line in the movie. It's a keen observation, and it's probably what happened too, is that when newspapers stopped caring about everyday people, then everyday people stopped caring about newspapers, because why would they want to read about everyone else in the paper and not themselves? So, and that can be kind of a silent majority of your readership. It also brings up larger issues of, while this writer definitely had writing skills, he also had ethical issues. So how do you meld being an interesting writer with also being a good person? You know, can the two go hand in hand, or do you need someone to be gritty and of the people and maybe have some of the problems that average people have to get in there and to understand their voice and to write in their voice? So it's an interesting dilemma. You know, even in other fields, the people who kind of like went a little bit further, like those beat writers, they were amongst the people, you know, or Charles Bukowski after the beat writers, kind of considered a post-beat writer, amongst the people. You know, he gambled, he went to the racetrack, he, you know, had car problems, he had women problems, he would write about those things. So, you know, how do you be interesting? It's an interesting question. How do you be interesting? So it brings me down to local weekly newspapers, getting back to the podcast. And how long did it take me to get to this point? 15, 16 minutes now. All right. So here's the point. This being weekly newspaper podcast, so I'm sticking to the theme. And I've been a little bit, while people subscribe to the paper still, and I'm getting new subscriptions, you know, maybe like one every third day or something, I'll get a new subscription to the local weekly paper that I run. And I recently started a Substack, and that's already raked in about $1,000 just off of people subscribing to the Substack based on the newspaper's masthead and everything. And it just started. I just started it like 2 weeks ago, and already maybe about 3 weeks ago. And already it's accrued money. Now it's not going to keep that pace going, but you know, maybe it could build to something. It could be another little revenue stream that makes life worthwhile. But a lot of people don't subscribe to the paper. So there were people posting on Facebook recently, you know, when's the townwide garage sale? And I had posted in the newspaper townwide garage sales on these dates, and I invited people to send in their listings, and we would publish it for free. And still, people were all asking online, when's the town garage sale, townwide garage sale? You know, when everyone does their garage sale at the same time, so that people that are garage sale hoppers can, you know, go around and get a lot of bargains and go from buy junk for their house, other people's junk to put in their house. And I made a logo for it and, you know, publicized it, and people still were oblivious to it. And, you know, people bump into me all the time and they say, you know, if you only did this with your paper, it would get more subscribers. And they think they have the solution, but they're always wrong. Unless you're actually putting out a newspaper, you don't, and you're looking at the numbers and stuff, you can't really give an opinion. It'd be like me saying, oh, if the Yankees only hired, you know, I don't know, whoever the big star is, you know, if they only got that guy, they'd win the World Series. So, yeah, who am I? I'm not the manager of the Yankees. I'm not the one paying the bills. I don't know what's going on behind the scenes. Same thing with journalism. There's so many people who have opinions, but unless you're actually in the game actively right now, not in the game like 1995 or something, but you're in the game right now, you don't know what's going on. Unless you're the one writing the checks and paying the bills, you don't. So don't be a pundit. Don't write books about it. Don't post on Facebook about what's wrong with journalism, et cetera, or what's right with journalism or whatever, unless you're actually in the game in some meaningful way and, you know, some kind of executive way. And also, you know, doing the journalism aspect too. But you're making decisions and you're seeing real numbers and everything. But they'll say, like, hey, if you only covered more, like, I don't know, high school sports. And we do, you know, we will. But in a print newspaper, by the time it comes out, the sports teams will already be on to the next game. It will already have had its run on Facebook and in different places. And I found that even when we do cover the high schools or the schools closely, it doesn't increase circulation at all, even if we do it consistently. And in my 4.5 years of owning this local newspaper, I've tried like all kinds of variations. Maybe I'll go to more meetings, you know, town meetings or village meetings or something like that. Maybe I'll go to school meetings. Maybe I'll cover this or that. Doesn't increase circulation at all. Doesn't at all. Because without that grain of controversy, and 99% of these meetings don't have any controversy. It's just like, hey, we're going to approve buying a new, snowplow. Is that really controversial? You need a snowplow, you order it. And also people can get the minutes. They can just go online and read the minutes. So if there's no controversy, if hordes of people aren't showing up at the meeting to protest, it's not really a story. You know, you can say, well, you know, it affects voters. But if they're not showing up at the meetings, maybe they're not interested. And it seems like, you know, like with school budgets, which are happening on Tuesday, they pass like 2-1. They pass pretty easily, usually. So I don't know. You know, by the time you print, it's not really a story anymore. So everyone thinks they have like the solution. During the pandemic, when it became hard for students to get their school picture done, I hired like a layout person and dealt with school districts and then actually did a photo day at a nice location and had a lot of students show up and did every class photo in the newspaper. It was crazily laborious. It cost money because I had to like kind of, you know, pay extra for it. And it really resulted in not many extra ads, not really much extra circulation. You know, maybe we sold another 50 papers, not much. And, you know, wasn't really worth it. You would think this would be some keepsake. So I think the feeling is that people under a certain age don't feel like having this paper document that's about their community and their actual, maybe even actually their kids or people they know, is really worth it for them. And you can say, oh, maybe you're just, maybe they're just getting it for free online. No, that's not it, because I've made it a point not to post things online, except the PDFs well after the issue has hit. So you would feel like if there'd be some urgency to want to see it right away if there was a real demand there. And I can look at the PDF download stats. They're not that great. So there's not like people are just saying, oh, I don't want to spend the $2. I'll wait for it to go online. In our case, no, that's not it. I think it's just like the value isn't there anymore. And, you know, and you can't even say it's like, oh, it's because they don't like the paper because they feel the paper is too liberal or too conservative or doesn't cover their exact thing. There's a little bit of everything in it, you know, so there's, and, you know, maybe they could say, well, for some reason they didn't find it useful at one point and they made a decision. These are younger people. They haven't been of age. You know, maybe they're homeowners not that long. They just don't see the value in buying the local paper. And I think it's because, first off, everyone has these devices now. So you can find out, even our Facebook page is about 10 times more popular than our print paper. If you look at raw numbers, they can just find out, you know, by going on Facebook or something, you know, what the score of the game was last night. So people now, I think they used to care about things they didn't know in the community. But now it's more like they just want to know exactly what they want to know, and they can get that information at their fingertips no matter what, even if it's not neat and tidy. If it's just some mom posting online or dad posting online that, you know, the score was 7-2 last night, and that's fine by them. That's all they really needed in the first place. And they can see the picture on Facebook, share it, and then it's gone the next, you know, they forget about it the next day and move on to the next thing. So it's not like all that special to be in the paper at this point in time, you know, and I can't see it being that way. So this movie made me wonder, like, is it writing that is what could maybe save newspapers? Like, instead of journalism, writing. And, you know, would good writing and writing that is not writing in a good journalistic sense necessarily, like who, what, where, when, but kind of has like more adjectives and is a little bit more of the people and kind of explains things in a storytelling type way, would that save papers if we kind of went back to like the mid 1900s and had like, you know, that personality? It's like, boy, I can't wait to see what that person's up to and to read that person's writing. Is that what can save papers instead of like just having a bunch of junk in there that maybe a few people are interested in? Maybe don't run the boring press releases that you feel obligated to, because, you know, the local church will be mad at you if you don't publicize their chicken barbecue. You know, like, maybe don't publish those because they're maybe only the people in that church are interested, and maybe the larger people aren't. Maybe don't cover a beat meeting if you go there and it's so boring. If you're bored sitting there as a reporter, maybe it's boring to everyone. And maybe there's a reason why there's no one in the audience. You know, maybe they're just not interesting. Maybe the local politicians aren't, you know, maybe they're doing a good job, but maybe they're just not that interesting. You know, so maybe to look for things that are more of interest and putting those in the paper and kind of having like that writerly feel to the paper and not appeal to the, you know, maybe don't kowtow to the special interests that want you to cover their thing, even though it's boring. To them, it might be interesting, but in reality, it's boring. So, you know, maybe trying to just be more interesting with a newspaper might be a way to go. I don't know. You know, if you knew there was someone with some writerly flair, maybe they have training in it, and they were going around your town and covering whatever they wanted to cover. They were just going around, and they were going around the town you live in, and they were writing 5,000, 10,000 words a week, a month, something like that. They're writing like, you know, 10,000 words a month, whatever, about like, hey, I went to the barbecue today. Here's what I saw. I went to the, I went to a local thrift store. Here's what I saw. I went to, here's a person that won an award, you know, and just kind of like knowing the personality of the writer, and the writer's trying to turn some phrases and can be, you know, those writers from the last century and this character in the movie I just saw, you know, they could be a little bit like, what is it, purple prose? You know, they could be a little bit like that at times, a little overwritten. You know, maybe some of the phrases they turn are a little bit too dramatic. You know, maybe they're a little bit, you know, I don't know, a little bit too much purple prose. You know, maybe it could be that way a little bit. But people know you're giving an effort. They know you have some training in writing. They know you have a flair for it. They know it's kind of your thing. And they're willing to take that journey with you to whatever you happen to go to in town. If you knew someone was doing that, and they were writing 5,000, 10,000 words a month, would you pay $4 a month to get those words? $8 a month? Like, if it were framed in that way, as opposed to you paying $4, $8 for your community weekly newspaper per month, depending on what the price is. If it's framed in that way, it's like, hey, we're going to take a journey with some writers that we like, as opposed to, okay, they're going to just put a bunch of quote-unquote news in the paper that, you know, that are like our vegetables that we're supposed to eat for dinner. Would you, if it were framed in that way, would you rather follow, would you put up like $4, $8 a month? I would. If I knew anyone in this community were kind of writerly and they were putting out 5,000 to 10,000 words a month, and all I'd have to do is pay $4 to $8 a month and I can get these words, and I can kind of trust this person, and I might not read everything they send, you know, like if they go to some bluegrass concert and they like bluegrass music and I don't, maybe I won't read that column. But you know, maybe I would. Maybe they'd find something interesting there. But I'm willing to take the journey with this person. And in the movie, the Richard Jenkins journalism character, the people in that poor neighborhood, they all knew who he was. He was a minor celebrity in that town. And they read, you know, they went along with him. He wasn't condescending, I guess. Although at the end of the movie, the locals, after they read his story, they feel he was being condescending and he gets into some trouble for that. I won't spoil anything. All right, so that's what I'm thinking. Like, if you had a writer writing your town story and trying to be interesting, and you understood the personality of that writer, and maybe that's why the Substack is kind of doing relatively better than I expected, because I'm a little bit, because I've been doing newspapers forever, I kind of write newspapers in a certain format. And not that I always stick to the AP style, objective style of writing. But with the newsletter, I'm even looser. And maybe people like that. You know, like I would mention something that was, oh, it's raining out today. Or, you know, my dog did something. Or, you know, I would mention that in the newsletter. And maybe people like that because they want to take the journey with me, the writer. This writer in the movie is kind of at the end of his line. He's an old 60, like I said, and he's an alcoholic and he has a bunch of issues. And he's been missing column deadlines and his publisher's getting a little upset with him. His editor is getting upset with him, but you know, I don't think I'm there yet where I'm that jaded and burnt out, but I think that could be a way to go. At the very least, it could just be an interesting story that, you know, it's about the community. And I have training in all kinds of writing, including prose writing. You know, I think that might be a direction to kind of go in and see what happens next. Because I've been experimenting with this 4.5-year-old paper because I teach journalism. And, you know, I also have my other paper called Campus News, which hits colleges, and that's written in a more fun way. I've written books and things of that nature, novels and poems and things of that nature. So I do have an interest in all kinds of writing. And I've experimented in all kinds of ways with this newspaper. And circulation has trickled up, and I'm sure most newspapers are losing circulation. But it hasn't gone up as much as the amount of work I put into the newspaper. And I think it's a larger societal problem where people no longer want to pay for news because they feel like it's not that important to them to get like a clipping of, you know, Junior at the prom and put with that on the refrigerator. I don't think that's that important to people anymore. Maybe the grandparents, but not like the parents who are now in their 30s and 40s, maybe even their 20s. I don't think it's that important to them, and they're the future. So, you know, are they going to subscribe to a Substack? I don't know if that's it either, but if it seems like the people subscribing to the Substack are older too. But will, you know, will writing maybe carry the day? You know, if you go from being a journalist who is tied to a certain style, which might be deemed boring by a lot of people, and you try to be more, go the more Studs Terkel, Charles Bukowski route, you know, will that kind of save small town newspapers? Do most small town newspapers have it in them to do that, to turn it around and kind of, you know, focus on being more writerly and less who, what, where, when, to the point, objective journalism, no adjectives, you know, that type of thing. I don't know. But I think it's worth trying. Anyway, it's late at night. It's dark. This is the podcast, Weekly Newspaper Podcast. You can, there's a new feature now. If you get podcasts via Apple Podcasts, and maybe some other services do this too, but you can just read the whole transcript if you don't want to listen to a podcast. So you can just go through the old podcasts that I've made. It's called Weekly Newspaper Podcast. Just find it, subscribe to it, and then you can click on transcript. And I looked at one of the transcripts today that Apple made, and it's actually pretty good. It's like really good transcription software. So I'm going to have to start. It's better than I've been using Descript to do my transcripts, my audio transcripts that I do journalistically. I might have to switch to maybe just publish it as a podcast and then pull the audio, because Apple's transcription software seems pretty darn good, and it's free. Anyway, so if you want to just read the transcript, do that. Weekly Newspaper Podcast, Darren Johnson, checking out. Go to the Substack, subscribe, journalpress.substack.com, journalpress.substack.com. Email me anytime at editor@journalandpress.com. So put the AND in there. All right, bye.